Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Relationships at work move your career forward or backward. They can be stimulating, fun, and meaningful, or they can be a pain in the butt. And your relationship with your boss is a special case that can be incredibly helpful and inspiring, or, as in Gallup's research in their recently published book, Well-Being, they say, spending time with the boss is 2 to 4 times more unpleasant than spending time with friends. Today on Career Buzz, mentorship, performance reviews, and the importance of working relationships in your career. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles. We help people make career and life choices aligned with what really matters. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Samuel Culbert is an award-winning author, researcher, and full-time tenured professor at UCLA's Anderson School of Management. His lab is the world of work, where he puts conventional managerial assumptions under a microscope to uncover and replace dysfunctional practices. His two latest books are Beyond Bullshit, Straight Talk at Work, and more recently, Get Rid of the Performance Review, How Companies Can Stop Intimidating, Start Managing, and Focus on What Really Matters. We'll talk to Professor Samuel Culbert in the second half hour of today's show, but first, Dr. Don Carmont is a training and development specialist, and he brings to his consulting practice expertise in people skills, gained from 30 years of leadership, teaching, training, writing, and public speaking to hundreds of thousands of people. Following a PhD in communications, Dr. Don Carmont has experienced many twists and turns in his career. Trainer in organizations from American Express to Zurich Life, top producer in a financial services company, led a multi-million-dollar nonprofit organization, hosted daily radio and weekly TV programs, and pioneered two churches by age 21. Don's the author of a book on mentoring skills called The Naked Mentor. Julie Brown has worked in more than 20 companies, gathering business savvy from industries related to food, retail, banking, insurance, agriculture, adventure, equipment, energy, health, research, and sales before she found her niche in career development. Dropping out of school in grade 12, she returned, earning her BA. Now, Julie is the career and mentorship coordinator with the Graduate Students Association at the University of Calgary. Julie Brown joins us live by phone from Calgary, and Dr. Don Carmont joins me live in our Career Buzz studio. Welcome, Julie and David.
Thank you. Hi,
thank
Mark.
You.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Don. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Excellent.
So, guys, thanks so much for joining us today. Julie, what do you like about your career these days?
Oh, my gosh. I love everything about my career these days. I get up out of bed and love to come to work. And it's probably because I love to help people. I don't feel like I'm working. I feel like I'm helping people.
And what are you doing as the coordinator of the mentorship program there in Calgary?
I match the graduate students, so they have a master's or PhD level, with a mentor in the community that will help them, guide them in their career.
And, you know, now that you've done so many different things in your career and now you're doing this work, to what degree is your career these days the full expression of who you are and how you want to be in the world?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I think it allows me to follow a path that I believe I was meant to follow, and I think that because it doesn't feel like work to me. And everything I've done in the past has complemented what I'm able to do today and how I can explain to students what the business world is really like.
I'd like to get a little more of your story, Julie, in a minute. Okay. I'm just going to go over to Don for a sec and ask you, Don Carmont, what do you like about your career these days?
Well, what I love about what I do is it is an expression of who I am. I believe that life is about being before it's about doing. And fulfillment comes from being who and what you are. As Warren Bennis says, a person really doesn't start out to be a leader. You seek to live your life to the full, manifest your vision, holding nothing back. And when others recognize the value of that, then you are a leader. So it really is about living out the DNA that's encoded inside of you, your total talent package. And for me, it's building organizations by building people, which is the tagline on my website and has been the mission of my life for many years.
And how are you being, and I'll ask that as opposed to doing, how are you being these days? What are the different things that make up your career these days?
It's involved with people one-on-one in coaching, executive coaching, mentoring relationships, classroom work, running leadership development courses, doing organizational development work with clients, essentially helping people get to where they want to grow in their lives and careers, asking challenging questions to help them uncover what the obstacles might be that are preventing them from living their life to the full. And so for me, that's a very challenging opportunity to be able to engage with people and help them tap into their resources and then manifest those in a fulfilling way in a career choice.
Yes. Well, you've had many career choices yourself. Take us back, Don. There were so many things that I just mentioned in the intro for you. What were your earlier career plans, if you can take us back from post-secondary?
Well, I'll have to go back further than that, because from the time I was a small child, I believed that my destiny was to be a preacher of the gospel. I was a kid preacher at age 10. And partly because of the religious culture in which I grew up, that seemed to be the forum in which I could find full expression of what I did not recognize were the gifts of connecting with people, caring for people. I still do pastoring, but not as a pastor, because much of the work that I did when I found myself in a leadership role in the church was engaging with people, helping them to determine what the best choices were for their lives. But I always found myself with the ability to speak in public, groomed from a very young age to do that, talking to large audiences when I was a teenager. And because of the narrow environment in which I was raised, that was the track that I believed I was on.
And that area that you were raised, here we are in urban downtown Toronto, where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in a very small town in southwestern New Brunswick. I like to say 1,000 people, including livestock. And so in my roots, which I'm very proud of and love that part of the world, I'm going back there for a week towards the end of August. But in the culture in which I was raised, I did not see the horizons of opportunities before me that later appeared.
I said in the intro, by age 21, you had opened or pioneered two churches. So this was your first career plan to be in the church?
It was, and I believe that would be a lifetime career. And it wasn't until my early 30s, I suppose, that I started thinking about other alternatives and where I might find fulfillment and be able to capitalize on the experience I gained from starting from scratch as an entrepreneur, going into communities, knocking on doors, and opening a church. So that was entrepreneurial experience. The public speaking, the radio and television I'd already done, the engagement with people and counseling and coaching. And it wasn't until later that I determined there were other options where I could find fulfillment, perhaps to an even greater level and with less limitations.
Before you actually started the consulting business that you have now, there were so many twists and turns. Can you give us maybe just a snapshot or a highlight maybe of one of the more unusual twists or turns that happened in your career after the churches and before the consulting practice?
Well, it was probably the transition that brought me to Toronto, where having built a successful business in financial services, I found myself less than fulfilled in doing that. Yes, I was providing a valuable service, but it still came up short in terms of the inner gratification and the sense that I was making the optimum contribution. And so I responded to an opportunity to move to Toronto. I was living in California at the time. And when I landed here, that opportunity not only did not materialize, but it collapsed, forcing me to do an inventory and think about what is it I really want to do with the rest of my life. And so at that juncture, I began exploring opportunities to stand in front of a room and offer training to people. Got recruited by a couple of training companies and then joined the faculty of the Canadian Management Center. Developed my own practice, and it's been onward from there.
How did that opportunity at the Canadian Management Center come up? Because listeners are always curious. It's one thing to hear a story and for somebody to say, well, this happened. But sometimes the mechanics of it, if you could just take us into the moment, was there a connection there? Did you just throw a resume in response to a job posting? How did it come together?
Well, I took the approach that I'd taken in building business as an entrepreneur in throwing out as much information to as many people as I could. And so I did send out a lot of resumes, and one of those resumes landed at the opportune time at the head of faculty at the Canadian Management Center, who showed up at another seminar I was conducting in Mississauga and liked what he heard, met with him, and it went on from there.
So it was the combination of the traditional resume approach and the non-traditional connecting with him in another venue.
Yes.
Great.
And I found that most of the business that I have done over the years has been less conventional. It's been more serendipitous. It's been more meeting somebody somewhere and it going from there. A phone call that came in yesterday from a contact of a contact that could eventuate in some business that will take me Julie's way in September.
We're talking to Don Carmont here on Career Buzz and Julie Brand. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM. Don Carmont is also the author of The Naked Mentor, and he has brought a copy with him as a giveaway for listeners. So during this interview, especially if you have a question or comment, you can pass it on to Miku, who's on standby here, and the phone number to give us a call for The Naked Mentor is 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. If you just let Miko know your info, and if you have a question or comment, please let us know. Julie Brown, take us back. What did you do in your career earlier on? I said in the intro you had left high school without going on to post-secondary at the time. What happened in your early career?
Well, back then, you didn't have to have a whole education to get a job. If you had some experience in work at all, you had an opportunity. And I had an opportunity with the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. And I spent 5 years with them from the age of 17 and traveled to Kitchener-Waterloo with them and then again out west, actually here to Calgary. And that's why I'm back here in Calgary, because I loved that experience. I learned every aspect of debit and credit that you can imagine, and yet I would not work in that field if it was the only work available. I guess that's the only way I would.
Is it one of the cases, Julie, where you learn what you don't want? Sometimes a difficult or challenging career situation is helpful because you find out what you don't want, which helps you then determine what you do want moving forward?
Exactly, and it doesn't mean that you're not good at that either.
Yes.
It just means that's not the job where you wake up and go, yay, I'm going to work.
Yes. It often is the distinction between using your strengths every day versus an asset, something that you're good at but you don't necessarily care about it as much. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you did go back to school. What eventually led you to go back into education?
Well, first of all, I worked, when I was in Calgary, I learned about the Gang Ranch, which is in British Columbia. And I had the opportunity to work there for a few months, and I really liked it. So that took me back to school to Agricultural College back in Ontario. That said, there wasn't too many beef cattle industries or farms going on in Ontario at that time. And they didn't really offer too much in the line of Western horseback riding, which is what I love to do. So I didn't get work in either of those areas, but eventually I got work in a lab after I had my children, and then I decided, you know what, I'd like to earn my university degree, and I'd like to do it in psychology. So that then led to the career development aspect of it as well, both of them through University of Waterloo and Conestoga College through distance education. So I just now received my degree, actually.
Well, congratulations.
Congratulations,
thank you.
Julie.
Thank you, Don.
So much of the career, much of the background that I said in the intro happened actually before you went back to school. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Is there one sort of interesting twist or turn in all of that moving around that you can share with listeners that might highlight some of the aspects of career transition for us?
I think what people need to understand is all the transferable skills that you gain from every job you ever have. And I guess a good example would be just shortly after I had my first child, I wanted to work. And the only way I could do that and still be a mom was to do something in the evenings. And so I learned how to become a fitness instructor. And I loved that job. I went through the process. I'm very strong on the point that I believe you should be qualified. So I did Fitness Ontario Leadership Program, and then I did a fitness course through YMCA, which was wonderful and very, very challenging. And then I began my fitness classes, and incredibly, everything I do in a fitness class is very similar to what I do when I facilitate a workshop. You have to stand up in front of people. You have to have a lesson plan prepared. The timing has to be all down, completely packed, so that you don't go over and you don't go under time. You have to be aware of the participants and make sure you're engaging them and involving them. So I think transferable skills are really, really important in any job, and for people to be able to identify them is important.
Great, great point. I think that's one of those things that people hear about, but they have a very hard time doing it for themselves. So there's people like you who can help them draw out those transferable skills.
And you too.
And name them. Thank you. And then finally, how did the job at the University of Calgary come about for you?
Well, this is another passion of mine. I really, truly believe the only way to get work is to meet people and gather information on places where you believe you'd like to work. And in they call them informational interviews. The word interview really bothers me because it scares a lot of people.
Yeah, I tend to call those field research. I try and make it a little more neutral. Field research or field trip if you actually go and take yourself out there.
Exactly.
It sounds more fun that way.
Absolutely, and it might motivate you to do it if you can get rid of that interview work.
Exactly.
And so I phoned from Toronto several people in Calgary at the university, Bow Valley College, and at that time Mount Royal College, which is now Mount Royal University. And I eventually realized I have to let them know I'm serious about this. So I took a trip out, and I had informational interviews lined up with several people. And this job was just, it was the timing, kind of like what Dawn said. It just landed in the right place at the right time, and I landed the job.
Really? It's so interesting about the field research that you did there. Was there actually a job posting for this job, or did it simply come up because somebody who you talked to said, oh, I think we're going to need you, or somebody like you pretty soon?
It started with one person, with a mutual friend, who led me to her supervisor, who led me to the supervisor I have now, but there was a job posting I knew nothing about.
Right. There's a perfect example, Julie. Thanks for sharing that, that sometimes there are postings out there. So it's not necessarily part of this so-called hidden job market. It wasn't hidden, but you just weren't looking at it because it was kind of hidden from your view.
That's true.
So there you go. Perfect example of how you can uncover opportunities, even if they're posted through your network.
Absolutely. And then the relationships I built through these other people led me to the relationship with my current executive director, which, by the way, I got to say, given your introduction, I love my current supervisor. We get along very, very well. So I think if people can find the right person to work with, they don't have to be scared of their boss.
Well, we are going to talk a little bit about that now in terms of mentorship, and then in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking to Professor Sam Culbert about that very thing, about how you can make a much better relationship with your boss. So very good to hear that that's true for you.
It is.
Now, I'd like to shift the conversation into mentoring, because both of you are involved in that, and spend some time talking about it. And then I know we're actually going to bring in somebody that you know, Julie, Brianna Bowie,
yes.
In a few minutes. Before we talk about formal mentoring, Dawn, I was reading your book, and it highlights how there's these informal, or you call it even unintentional, mentoring relationships. And it turns out that we're all mentors, and we all influence others in informal ways. Dawn, can you just start the conversation off by talking about these unintentional mentoring relationships?
Well, I believe that mentoring can be deliberate, or it also can be unintentional. And as you suggested, I have concluded that in some way or another, we all inevitably mentor others. There are short-term, long-term relationships. There are more casual or more involved engagements. But I developed a course a couple of years ago for the U.S. Army on finding opportunities to be mentored. And in that program, we look at what do you look for? And one of the things is that sense of connection that you can have with somebody where you can have a relationship of openness and trust. And if that openness and trust is not there, chances are you will tend not to feel comfortable enough to share your innermost dreams, your vision, to talk about the challenges and obstacles and hurdles that you're facing. And I have found in my own life that I've always kept an eye out for others from whom I could learn. So the old adage that when the student is ready, the teacher will come. My coin on that is that when the learner is ready, the lesson is there. And there will be people in our lives from whom we can learn. But for me, the number one rule of adult learning is the law of readiness. And if readiness is not there, then people will miss those opportunities. And I think it's heightening that awareness and looking around and being sensitive to that and asking yourself, who is there in my circle? Whom might I contact that I could engage? And I have found that even people that you might think are unapproachable are often quite willing. For me, the most successful people are those who, in spite of whatever they may have gained materially, are willing to give of themselves to others. There's no arrogance, there's no hubris, there's no sense of I'm better than you. There's a sense of wanting to share not only of their substance, but share of themselves and make those deposits in the lives of others when there's opportunities
right
to
on.
Do so.
The law of readiness sounds like a shifting of the balance. When one thinks of mentoring, one often thinks they are going to mentor me, and it's more about them, the mentor, if you're thinking about arranging a mentorship for yourself. And in fact, it sounds like what you're saying is shift the balance. You have to be ready, and then the lesson, as you say, is ready for you when you're ready for it.
I think so. That's why many organizational initiatives and structured mentoring programs are not as effectual as they might be. The formal alignment and matching, the structure around that tends to be more of apprentice relationships for skill development. And I'm not gainsaying those. I think those are of value. But for me, mentoring goes beyond just the workplace transfer of skills and the training of a person to be able to perform certain tasks or duties. It goes much deeper than that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, and if there are any listeners or human resources professionals who have implemented these kind of mentoring relationships, we'd love to hear from you, and you can give us a call at 946-7000, area code 416-946-7000. Julie, you have a structured or more structured mentoring program at the University of Calgary. Can you just tell us a tiny bit about how that works, and if there's an example that you can give us of some mentoring relationship that worked?
Oh, absolutely. And I have to agree with Don 100%. And that's actually a very big challenge for me to get through to the students, is it isn't so much where this mentor works, as much as it needs to be a good match for you, that you trust them, that you can talk to them about pretty much anything and get assistance from them and guidance from them. And it's been a challenge, because the students have this mindset that they really need to get with a mentor who's in a specific industry.
Yes.
And that's really so sad, because none of the mentors I've had that have been effective for me have really had too much in common with my work. So it's quite interesting to me. One of the cases that I have that I can share with you is of a gentleman who works at it's a chemical engineering company here in Calgary.
Yes.
And he has had several students of mine, actually, and he's wonderful, because he finds out exactly and very quickly what it is the student is searching for and introduces them to the proper people to assist them in getting what it is they need. And the student has been absolutely amazed at the possibilities that have been opened up because of this, so that they've built a network, they've had answers to questions, they've had hands-on experience in some cases with some things that they've been looking at. And it's been a wonderful experience for both, well, I would say all parties, because like I say, he's mentored several students.
Right, and it sounds like it's kind of surprising for the mentees or the proteges or whatever word we use, that they don't know what they don't know, I guess. They don't realize what the value of it is, and they think it's about a job match or something.
Exactly.
Is that
you
what they're thinking, Julie?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what you can tell them 10 times, this is not a way for you to get work with a company. This is to help you understand business and what you're going to face when you're ready to walk out these doors and into work.
Now, Don, how long do mentoring relationships last? You know, are they formal or are they informal? What works and what doesn't?
I think they can be formal or informal. They can be short or long term. I received an email yesterday from Albania from a protege that I mentored for a period of 5 years. And I met him in a restaurant where he was a waiter. And we developed a friendship. Little did I know that he'd been a lawyer back in Albania. I helped him get into a university here. He finished a master's degree, went back and got appointed by the head of justice to head up a team that investigates fraud and abuse in the legal system in Albania, and just this week got appointed to a special NATO assignment. I continue to mentor him by email, long distance, but for a period of 5 years, we would meet every Saturday with, I had no agenda, it was his agenda. But the difference was, when we became acquainted, he was eager, he was hungry, he had a readiness to learn. And he wasn't looking so much for career insight as he was looking for life insight, looking for principles that he could get his teeth into that would help him build his life. And I think far too often people see it as a very narrow niche simply for looking at the, I don't want to just simply use the word career, but the job focus, because career is much bigger than that.
Absolutely.
And it's about the development of the person and becoming all that you are, and then more obviously where you should plug that in will appear on the horizon for your life in terms of career opportunities.
Yes. Thanks for sharing that story with the fellow from Albania. I think maybe what we need are more success stories like that out there, especially as the aging population in Canada. We have a lot of boomers who have a lot of experience. I know they want to give back more. We have a lot of younger people who need that experience. And wouldn't it be great if we could create these networks and relationships? But it sounds like people need to understand what this is, and the stories illustrate it. I think we have Brianna Bowie on the line as well. Brianna, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to Career Buzz, Brianna. Now, I know you've been connected with Julie around this mentoring program. Can you briefly share with listeners what your experience has been?
Oh, yeah. It was such a wonderful opportunity that Julie gave me to mentor one of her students. And like you were saying, it came in the form of actually being matched with someone who is in my industry. So I was able to impart my direct background. And I also had a really unbelievable opportunity myself in Los Angeles. I was there for about 20 years. And I had a mentor that was looking for a protege as a singer in jazz music. And he had studied with Stan Kenton, played with Natalie Cole, and he knew all the backstories of Dizzy Gillespie and Ella Fitzgerald. And he was worried that there wasn't going to be anybody to pass the torch on to.
Yes.
So he mentored me so wonderfully, not just in music, but as you say, he mentored me spiritually, he mentored me in terms of politics and what was going on in the current affairs of the world. He still mentors me to this day, so I'm still learning from him. He's just an absolute genius in my mind. But so I learned a lot about mentoring because I was the recipient of this wonderful mentoring. And when Julie came to me and said, look, would you love to do this for one of my students, I said, yes, absolutely.
Nice. So what can both, and I'd like to kind of pull the mentoring conversation closed with this because we just have a few more minutes, but can I ask each of you a question about how to make this work? If listeners are either thinking they'd like to establish a mentoring relationship for themselves as a mentee, or if there's listeners feeling like they've had, Brianna, like your experience, they have been mentored, and now they'd like to be a mentor for others, but they just don't know where to go or how to start. Brianna, what would you suggest?
Well, I was fortunate that I met Julie, and I think if you can seek out, the university is a wonderful place to make contacts and to get directed into the right direction for things like that. So I think the University of Calgary and her program that she's involved with is actually a great place to start.
That's great advice, and I know lots of universities and colleges across the country connect with their alumni and create opportunities for alumni to connect with students. So I think that's a really good idea. Julie, how about you?
Well, obviously that's definitely a way I'd like for people to find out about mentoring, but for myself, I think you meet your mentors in every walk of life and the opportunities are open to you several times a day, and you just have to be open enough to recognize a person that you connect with very closely.
Yes.
Brianna actually is one for me. She has given me great advice in many, many situations. I've also got one in Switzerland that I Skype with, and the information I get from this person is always absolutely accurate and good for me. And like Don says, he met a guy one day in a restaurant, and he knew, he could see that there was a connection there. And I think that's what you have to look for, is Who do I connect with?
Yes, and that law of readiness that Dawn had mentioned earlier. When you're ready, it'll come.
Absolutely.
And I love the idea of couple of opportunities a day. Is that what you think, Julie, at least?
No, minimum. There's lots more than that.
And Dawn, what would you suggest?
In all of my leadership courses, I tell people towards the end, the two things that will accelerate your career in personal, professional development more than anything else are, number one, find a mentor. Number two, be a mentor. Find somebody. Look for somebody that's hungry, that's eager, a person that asks more questions. I'm troubled that many people of my genre are not leaving behind a legacy, building lots of things that will collapse, but not really looking at what they can leave in the lives of others. And one final thought. We often think of mentoring as being vertical, but it can also be horizontal. I have a number of mutual mentoring relationships where I mentor that individual in one or more ways, that individual mentors me in other
yes.
ways. So mutual mentoring is another concept that I think should not be dismissed.
And finally, the three of you, if I could ask a question I like to ask towards the end of an interview. We don't have a lot of time for it. So in a nutshell, from your personal experiences, what have you learned about making good career and life choices for yourselves? Dawn?
Follow your heart. If you didn't need to make a living, what would you want to do that you would love doing and do it, even if you had to pay others to permit you to do it? Follow your internal DNA. It's encoded inside of you.
Julie, what have you got to say about that?
I have to absolutely agree with Dawn. I can't add to that.
And Brianna?
Well, I absolutely agree as well. And it really is the singer. You absolutely have to follow your heart. If you listen to those intuitions, we all have our guidance. If you follow that, you'll never go wrong.
Great. Now, Brianna, we do actually have a song of yours that I'd like you to set up, but I'd like to just thank each of you, Dawn, Carmon, and Julie Brown and Brianna Bowie, for joining us here on Career Buzz and sharing your thoughts and career experiences. Dawn has brought a copy of his book, The Naked Mentor, so just give us a call. In fact, we have a couple of copies here, a few copies, so if you want to give us a call, the phone number is 946-7000. That number will be free in a moment because both lines are tied up, but 946-7000. And you can let Miko know your contact info. And all of the links for Dawn's site and Julie's program and Brianna's site will be on the Career Buzz page. Brianna, we've got this great song. I know we've got four songs there, but the one that I thought was fabulous was, what was it? It had the word work in it.
Nice work if you can get
Nice work if you can get it. Do you want to just set up that song?
Yeah, actually there's some wonderful players. This CD in general is called Chasing Rainbows, and I got a wonderful opportunity to work with the all-time living legends in jazz. And two of them that are actually featured on this cut is Ron Anthony, who is a guitar player, played with Frank Sinatra for 15 years, and of course my mentor, Doc Doolittle, who he plays alto saxophone on here. It's a wonderful cut. I listened to Ella Fitzgerald do it, and it was one of those things like we were just talking about. I followed my intuition. I just knew that was a great fit for me. So we did it live. I did that in one take.
Great. Here's Brianna Bowie.
Holding hands at midnight beneath a starry sky. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Strolling with the one boy, sighing sigh after sigh. Nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Just imagine someone waiting at the cottage door, where two hearts become one. Who could ask for anything more? A loving one who loves you, then taking that vow. Nice work if you can get it, and if you get it, won't you tell me how? Thank you. just imagine someone waiting at the cottage door. Where two hearts become one, who could ask for anything more? A loving one who loves you, then taking that vow. Nice work if you can get it, and if you get it, won't you tell me?
Nice song too. She's great. Nice jazzy voice. We're back on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on, I want to just remind the listeners about our Direct Connect group on LinkedIn and the Career Buzz fan page on Facebook. If you want to find out more about upcoming guests, please do have a look. Professor Sam Culbert is an award-winning author, researcher, and full-time tenured professor at UCLA's Anderson School of Management. His laboratory is the world of work, where he puts conventional managerial assumptions under a microscope to uncover and replace dysfunctional practices. His two latest books are Beyond Bullshit, Straight Talk at Work, and more recently, Get Rid of the Performance Review, How Companies Can Stop Intimidating, Start Managing, and Focus on What Really Matters. Professor Sam Culbert joins us live by phone from California. Welcome to Career Buzz.
Thanks, Mark.
So what do you like about your career these days, Sam?
Yeah, I get to learn all the time.
Yeah. And what are you doing these days? What makes up your career?
Well, right. I'm teaching, researching, and learning, writing about what I learn and putting it to the test of other people's experience.
How is your career now as a professor, as a researcher, as a writer? How is that career a full expression of who you are and how you want to be in the world?
Well, you know, growing up, I didn't know how I wanted to be, but I knew a great deal about how I didn't want to be. And I think that that through making making good choices at important forks in the road, I got very lucky, and I wound up in a wonderful career. And now, after being in my job for many, many years, I've been able to just be myself very naturally. And frankly, I can't tell the difference between living and learning and working.
So it's all good. It sort of blends, the work and the fun all blend together.
It's working for me right now, and I think that, you know, what I tell my students is that a career is an after-the-fact story you tell about what happened.
That's an amazing definition. I hope listeners take that in. A career is an after-the-fact story of what actually happened. Because you can only tell, you can connect the dots afterwards, right? And it's hard to connect them beforehand.
I was listening to your last segment, and I was thinking about mentoring and role modeling. And one perspective that I want to insert, because it's been very important to me, is when people live their lives very personally, everything you think very personally and specifically about everything that's happening to you. And I think that's half of what you need to know. I think the other half is to be able to stand back and look at the bigger picture and understand that a lot of things that are happening to you aren't personal. That there's a bigger story going on in a company or in a society or in the evolution of one's life, and you have to put yourself in that perspective, and you get a bigger picture of what's taking place, and you need to take that into consideration. For example, in my book now about ridiculous performance reviews, people take performance reviews too seriously.
Yes.
It's corporate theater. They're all baloney, and people say, well, you know, but it may be baloney, but it's what's happening to me. It affects my life. It affects my pay, my career progress, and all. And I say back to them, it's you this time. It is not. Performance reviews have nothing to do with your performance. They have to do with how one individual sees your performance this time and you get a different boss, you're going to get a different review, and even the scores that you get for your review have little to do with what you had in mind when you went out and took the actions that you thought were well advised.
Exactly. Sam, before we continue on the performance reviews and previews, and I want to know more about that, what about the story in your career? I know, in fact, you, like me, did an engineering degree prior to getting into psychology. When you were earlier in your career and doing that engineering degree, where did you think your career was going in those days?
I had no idea. I had little passion for it. I just was told, this is what you're good at, this is what you should be. But I was lucky that in the small decisions I made, I gravitated toward systems engineering.
Yes.
And today I use that logic, not necessarily, I don't remember anything about engineering specifically, but I do use the logic of being able to see the bigger picture, as I was talking about before, and understand what the system is, and then place myself in that system and get a bigger perspective. And I get out of my own skin just a little bit.
And so what did lead you after engineering school into psychology?
Girlfriend. That's what happens to people. A girlfriend who was studying psychology, and she was convinced, I guess she took a statistics class too seriously and decided I was the standard normal deviant, and convinced me that I ought to take some psychology courses and become more conscious about my behavior and my drives. And I did, and you know what? It worked. I don't know her anymore, but I sure know a lot of psychology.
Yeah, it's amazing how big decisions like that happen. I mean, I went into engineering school without much conscious thought like you, and it's funny how things happen. You go into psychology because of a girlfriend, and then it's what you do with what you've got as opposed to making the right decision the first time. Would you agree with that? It's about making good with what you've got in the same way that you said a career is an after-the-fact story.
Well, yes, but, you know, in my case, I'd say I had to realize the socialization I had. I had to realize what were the assumptions that were implicitly, covertly snuck into my head that were stupid for me. I had to go beyond my upbringing and become a self-invented person.
Can you give us an example of one of those assumptions?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, big assumptions, little assumptions. I remember one time my first child spilled some milk, and I had an irrational reaction like that had messed up the floor. Of the floor of what? Of tile? You wipe it right up. And I thought, where? How come I got so emotional, so upset by her spilling milk? Was she careless? No, she was a 2-year-old, 3-year-old. That's what 3-year-olds do. And I, reflecting back, you know, my mother, my father would get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. When he came back, my mother had made the bed. That was my upbringing. I had to get beyond it.
Yeah, and we can get stuck with some of those stories from our upbringing when we're making our career and life choices. So what led you then in your work in the world of psychology to focus on these relationships between employees and managers?
Well, I discovered, you know, just through experience, that I had an ability that many people don't. That when something is going on, an event is taking place, I can track that event through the realities of several people simultaneously. In other words, I was good at working with groups. I understood that everybody was living a different life and that people attribute meaning to events. The events don't hold them in and of themselves. So that ability to start to look at management systems and what goes on in organizations through the mindsets of different people, and to understand the play inside the play that people aren't really getting, I could understand why what was going on that took a four-hour meeting to make a decision that should take 3 minutes, as each person was angling to figure out a way to influence what ought to be done, just nuance influence, in order to get that decision to be more wonderful for him or herself. So that's when I started looking at the management systems and thinking about what's going on here that prevents people from being their best. Now, growing up, I didn't receive much affirmation, but at some point I affirmed myself, and I realized there's a goodness and a quality of wonderfulness in everybody. And as a system, or the performance review to be specific this time, is all about telling people what they're doing wrong and what's not right about their thinking. It's crazy because people are getting critiqued in business and in work situations all the time about their deficiencies, and by people who don't get their best qualities, who don't get their strengths. In other words, we're all broken and deficient in some way, but somehow people find a way to do good things at work and to get results for the company. We're not talking about catering to the boss's ego. Get results for the company. That's what it's supposed to be about. And you got bosses critiquing them and telling them what they need to learn to do better that have nothing to do with how they go about being proficient. Boss doesn't even get them. And the company puts them in a situation where she or he is the psychologist of the day. And the person who's giving the critique isn't looking at the other individual, at the operator, operative. That person's looking in the mirror and saying, here's how I go about doing it, and this is what makes me happy. Get the other guy in your sights.
So you've come up with something as an alternative to these problems that you're outlining with the performance review, and you suggest something about a performance preview. Can you outline your ideas on what that is and how it's different from a performance review?
Sure. And incidentally, Mark, my website is performancepreview.com.
Yeah. And I know that book that you've mentioned has been covered in lots of media. I've seen coverage that you've had all over the place, Get Rid of the Performance Review. And in it, you tackle this very big topic of performance reviews that are ubiquitous in management. So what have you got as an alternative?
It's just common sense. First of all, get rid of performance reviews. That's management by intimidation. They scare the heck out of, it's just bad management. You got, it makes, putting yourself as an owner of the company, performance reviews make it less likely that an employee is going to tell his or her boss or anyone else what's going wrong at work. So we want performance previews. We want bosses and subordinates talking honestly and openly before the bus goes off the road, while results can still be improved, where there's a lack of resources, you need the operative, the employee operative, to tell the company, the boss, as the vehicle for that communication, here's what we need that we don't have. Performance reviews talk about it after the fact. They talk about what went wrong. No, you want bosses and subordinates talking openly and honestly. Well, they can't. They can't when the subordinate fears the boss's judgments about him or her. So in order to get that open and honest conversation, we have to get rid of we have to change the politics. The boss's job should not be to give reviews and critiques and judge 20% of the employees excellent, 70% average, and 10% with deficiencies that have to be corrected. That is dumb. That just puts employees on the defensive. You change the politics and tell the boss, you know what? Your job is not to be the village critiquer. Your job is to make sure that everybody working for you succeeds, and succeeds for the company and succeeds for themselves, that they find a way of being personally and corporately effective. So you're going to change the politics. You're going to tell the boss, you know what, instead of evaluating you on the bullshit critiques you give employees, we're going to evaluate you on how good a job you do in helping your employees to get the company the results it needs. So you're going to change the politics. Now the boss has got some skin in the game. And we're now talking about how we can help employees and bosses to gradually learn to trust one another, because without trust, no one's going to say anything authentically, and to develop the trust that comes from truly understanding how the other guy operates at his or her best, learning that this person has some sensitive areas, and when you know those sensitive areas or those skills that you're never going to get from that person, or that attitude that you'll never find in that person, no matter how hard you badger and beat them over the head with a performance review, that you start to accept one another and put people in a situation where they can talk candidly about the prize. And the prize is get the company the results it needs. The company will succeed. People will feel really good about themselves instead of I did what my boss required me to do in order to suck up and get a good review, and the people get to know each other not as they really are, not within the pretentious ways of pretending that they're supposed to be perfect.
Yes. Now, what would you say then? There's going to be a lot of people who might say, "Yeah, but." I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and it sounds like good management. We might have human resources people or even finance people saying, well, we need the performance review so that we can spread out our evaluation. Some people are a 5 out of 5, some are a 4 out of 5, some are a 3 out of 5, and then we can figure out how we're going to give our salary increases based on those performance reviews. Now, how do you respond to those critiques?
The reason I wrote get rid of the performance review, how managers can stop, how companies can stop intimidating, start managing, and focus on what really matters. The reason I wrote that is I had just published an award-winning book, Beyond Bullshit, and somebody asked me, what's the biggest bullshit in companies today? Easy, performance reviews, because all the things you said are pretense. It's not true. Performance reviews do not determine the pay raises people get. But that's a different negotiation. That's market rate. And in fact, when they start using performance reviews to determine people's pay, there's all sorts of assumptions that if you pay me more, I'll give you better quality. I mean, that's stupid stuff. All that dissolves. The book systematically deconstructs every one of the alleged benefits of performance reviews and shows them to be poppycock. They're all baloney. None of them hold. Human resource people, first and foremost, should be the guys leading the way to getting rid of performance reviews, because they know how much managers hate giving them. They know how much employees hate receiving them.
Yes.
And yet they're the ones that are reminding managers you better give them.
Yes.
Why? Because it's a power grab for human resources.
That resonates with me, Mark, and I've been teaching this in my leadership courses now for years, that you have a conversation with people and you invite them to think about where they want to go in particular goal areas, how you can support them,
yes,
help them get there, what obstacles they're facing, and what they enjoy most about their work, and then free them up so that they can do their best.
Right. That's Don Carmont still here in studio. Thanks, Don. And Sam, we just have about a minute or so, and I just want to help listeners understand the performance preview notion a tiny bit better. And I know, as I've read through some of your book, there are certain questions that you suggest being asked. The manager can ask the employee can ask the manager, that turns this whole performance review into a preview that makes it much more focused on results. It makes it much better. Can you just outline a couple of those questions so listeners get a better idea?
And incidentally, if you, I try it on your living partner, your spouse, whoever you want to have a better relationship with, what are you getting from me that you like? I started on a positive
then.
What do you receive from me that you don't like? Now listen to what I'm saying. It is about you and I. It is not about absolutes. So I'm asking you what you get, given all your sensitivities, that you don't like. And then I want to understand, well, how come you don't like that? What about your background cause that you not like? Then the third question could be, what aren't you receiving that you feel, if you got it, would cause you to be even more wonderful in our relationship or more wonderful in the way you do your job? You find out from people what resources they would like to have to supplement all the resources that they do.
Perfect. Now, that's great. Sam, you know, we're just running out of time here, so that last question, though, I really appreciate. And if listeners are interested, they can have a look and find out more or get the book. And the site is performancepreview.com. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. Samuel Culbert, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz today. Really appreciate you taking the time to share your views.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay. Thank you. You have been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives.